Welcome, rock stars, from Rockland USA Studios in Washington, D.C. This is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda, our in-house lawyer and real estate agent, and we're so grateful you've joined us. Call or text your questions or comments 24 hours a day to 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Rock on the Money, or our website at rockonthemoney.com. How you doing, Amanda?
Great. How are you, Craig?
I'm dealing with the stock market, the roller coaster. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. I don't mind the roller coaster because I have a long time and I don't worry about it. But you look at it more often than I do.
Well, when I messaged you last week and said, hey, I just looked at my account, you said hypocrite.
What was the one word I responded?
Hypocrite.
Yeah, exactly. Because you always tell everyone, don't look at it. Long-term mindset.
I know. It is long-term mindset. What do we got on this show?
Today we're going to start it off with a couple of social media questions. Thanks for all of that. We don't have any call-in questions this week.
No.
So we do need some callers to call in to add to our questions for the next show. But we are going to then talk about the baby steps, do a review, and some final thoughts on that, at least final for now. Of course, we'll weave in our baby steps into probably most conversations going forward, right, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You're stuck with them from here until eternity.
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about a topic called Core and Explore.
I love it.
And then we'll wrap it up. Yeah. And then we'll wrap it up with a Savvy Savings segment on budgeting for annual expenses.
I have an idea of what one of them could probably be.
Okay.
All right. What's the first question?
So this is a pretty straightforward question. We had a question from Tom. What's a decent yearly return on a 401k?
And I saw that on Facebook and I gave it a quick answer. And then I was like, you know what? And then somebody replied and said, well, it should be 6 to 8% for planning purposes. And I'm like, I do recall that. You know, little old me, I got Google sitting here. So I Googled this and then I came up with that it was the answer. Some reasons why that is the answer that a lot of people have heard. But then why am I and you and many others getting higher returns on their average? And so I came up with some quick information. I'm going to fly through this and I would love to get your inputs on this because you're in my arena. I think you can relate to a lot of things in here. So some quick stats that Morningstar, they're the ones that do a lot of reviews of mutual funds and stuff, Amanda. They claim an average return of 5% per year is a good number for using for your financial planning purposes.
I was like,
that can't be right. But Morningstar is a very well-respected thing. I'm like, that's crazy. And then Motley Fool, which you're a big fan of, they went back and did a research. And in the last 5 years, they discovered the average individual's 401k return was just 7%, while the S&P 500 index returned 15%. Which means, Amanda, and I can do this math, the average 401k is returning less than half of just a simple broad index.
Yeah. So before you even got to that, my immediate assumption or guess was that people are not, they're just putting all their money into the 401k and using the target fund plan.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, we're going to get into that. That is one of the reasons that I found BlackRock, which is a huge investment firm. They report, and you know, I want to get a good answer on what the S&P 500 returned, because I throw charts up all the time.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, let me go find a major investment firm like BlackRock. What do they say the S&P 500 did over the last 20 years? They came back and said what I already knew, over 8% on average over 20
years. For 20 years.
Long-term mindset.
Yeah, so that includes the 2008 crash.
Absolutely. And there was actually a bunch of corrections in there as well. So the difference between the S&P 500 8 And what they're claiming, 5, that's 3%. And that doesn't sound like a lot. You know, yeah. You hear 3%, like, that's not a lot. But if you throw that into a compounding calculator, Amanda, mm-hmm. with a typical 401k, that could cost you tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars yeah. over the life of your account. So yeah. I did further research. See, this is what happens when these people send in these questions. I want to know what is going on out there. And basically, right. a lot of things we've been saying is what's going on out there, but it's just confirming it. So let's go through this. Why are 401ks doing 5 to 8% on average? Well, number one,
that sounds pretty poor. I mean, I wouldn't settle for less than 10%.
Oh, heck no. And no. If you go to your account, it does say what you're doing long term with the account. And yeah. I'm double digit. So yeah. I want to know, why is everyone else doing 5 to 8%? And why are we using 5 for planning purposes? So number one, employees are choosing actively managed funds, or they're being forced or placed into actively managed funds, which you just mentioned, Amanda.
Yeah,
a target like date target fund funds. Is what most employees are automatically placed into. And that's an actively managed fund.
You automatically get placed in that, and you're in that unless you go in and actually change it.
Right.
And so most people, they sign up for a 401k and then actually don't take the second step to make selections.
Right. Now, as opposed to a passive fund, which is what we call an index fund, like the S&P 500 index fund. For those of you that don't know it, an actively managed fund means there's a team of people that cost money, Amanda, that mm-hmm. buy and sell stocks all day long based on what the fund's rules are. Every fund has a strict set of rules that they developed over time. And like, they can only have so much cash on hand, how many bonds mm-hmm. they have to have. And they have to meet that every day. That's actively managed. A passive fund is like the S&P 500. Here are the 500 companies. This is the percentages. For 1 year, this is all we're doing. Done.
Yep, done.
They don't have to do anything other than buy and sell stocks of those, and the computers are doing it automatically. So they basically cost nothing to run those funds. So
right.
There's your fees. Number two, which we've seen this in our Facebook group, Amanda, in the emails I'm getting. Investors are fearful of the stock market and are overly cautious with their funds. So they're picking these bond funds, or like I've said before, I know of one individual I've been coaching. They've been in this stable value fund for the last 10 years, which does 0 to 2% per year, which doesn't even keep up with inflation for the last 10 years, Amanda.
Yikes.
And they've missed the greatest rise of the stock market in history.
Oh, that's sad.
That stuff just, and I hate to tell them that. I'm like, but let's do what we can. The other thing I've seen in our Facebook group is people are wanting to time the market. They see the stock market. Remember last week how on Monday and Tuesday the stock market had those massive drops?
Yes. Yep. So and everyone was in a tizzy.
Everybody said, "Oh, I need to get out." I'm like, when you do that, you are causing yourself to be one of the people getting 5 to 8%. And
exactly.
I know in your mind you think you're doing the right thing, but you're not. You are not doing it. I have many stories of former coworkers that I've had who have admitted in the 2008, 2009, they pulled out, tried to time all that, and they messed it up because there was a quick rebound and they missed it. And that over time cost them a lot of money and they regret it.
Did you do anything last week?
I stayed in all of my mutual funds that I'm in. I have two 401ks that I'm active in that I'm currently mm-hmm. contributing to. And I have one 457, which I cannot contribute to. Out of all those, the mutual funds are still in place. I have not done anything. I do not intend to do anything. I don't care what happens in the future. I'm leaving them alone. However, I do have a brokerage account attached to my 457, and those electronic ETFs, I did pull out of those because I can.
Yeah. I only invest in ETFs. Did you know that, Craig?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah. I don't do mutual funds.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
I didn't sell No, that's a lie. So I sold something last week that was already underperforming and I was going to sell anyway. And it actually, this is interesting. As everything else was falling, this one didn't fall. So it was a good time for me to bail out on it. And then I scooped up a bunch of other stocks that I've been in that performed very well, but I got a sale on, you know, they were on discount.
And just to clarify, the reason you can do only ETFs, because you have an IRA. 401ks, you cannot do that. You can only go up to 50% of your balance to put into a brokerage. The rest of them, it's whatever they tell you. This is your menu. You can only choose those. So I just want to make sure people understand.
Yes.
I mean, I would love to be in all ETFs because I would have bailed out, but I can't bail out of mutual funds because it takes a whole trading day, whole trading cycle to be able to time to get out. And that's what messes people up. So,
yeah, no, I guess you're right. So in my 401k, which I don't even hardly look at all because it just started a few months ago and it's not my main source.
Yeah. I have one of those too.
I'm 100% in stocks though.
Yeah. So, yeah. What else we have? Oh, and here's the big one. We've already talked about this. Fees charged by many 401ks, 403bs are notorious for fees. They're just, many of them are horrible. 457 plans as well. And these fees, if you plug them into a compounding calculator, can add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. The SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, Amanda, the federal government, reports that a 0.75, a 0.75% difference in fees in a $100,000 portfolio can cost an investor $30,000 over a 20-year period.
Wow, that's crazy. Okay. It seems like such a small number because it's less than 1%.
I know. See, people don't think these little fees. Look, I'm not against an advisor charging a fee. If they can earn it, if they can beat the index, I'll pay the guy. I'm good.
Yeah.
But most cannot. So that's just the reality. Hey, I also found this guy. You talked about personal capital recently.
We did, that app.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, so apparently they have an analysis tool. I think you talked about this.
Yeah.
So there's a guy on Reddit, and he used this fund analysis tool. He plugged in all of his accounts and all the things he's investing in, and he discovered that between age 39 and 65, his total fees were going to add up. You ready for this? Mm-hmm. Drum roll.
Okay.
$594,993.
Ooh.
Out of an account balance of $2.6 million.
So it would have been well over $3
million. Yeah. So after moving his investments around and running it through the calculator again, he got into passive index funds like S&P 500 index or whatever, and some other funds. He was able to reduce his projected fees to just $86,000, saving him $410,000 in fees.
Wow.
That I have nothing else. That's just a big wow.
That's almost half. Yeah, that's like $500,000.
Yeah. So anyway, guys. Education is key. Everything that we're doing here, guys, for you, for free, we're helping people show them charts, showing them visuals of their accounts, of how the funds are in or not performing. Savvy Savings with Amanda, a lot of things that you do a ton of research, you put a lot of time into this, our weekly topics. Guys, all this does make a huge difference with your 401k and your other investments. We're just giving you basic information.
I'm still stuck on that $500,000. I mean, think about it. How many more years of retirement would you have gotten if you didn't pay so much in fees? I'm still really stuck on that.
There's a lot of people that are listening to this podcast that probably won't even have that amount saved in their 401k. Yeah, this guy was going to pay it in fees.
Yeah.
Guys, we're not bashing advisors or actively managed funds. We're telling you factual information. These aren't conspiracy theories. It's math. It's fourth grade math. It is not difficult, Amanda, in my opinion, over a long term to get 8 to 12%. I find it very difficult not to get that. I really do. I did it. I'm actually a little bit higher than that, but, and I'm not doing anything radical. I really am not. Anyway, I know it's debatable. I got a question for you, Amanda.
Okay.
This is not me, this is from social media. Can I open a Roth IRA for my child? Ooh. That's a good one.
So, yes. Look, I didn't even say it depends.
It depends.
But yes, but
yes.
Only under certain circumstances.
Okay. I'll buy that one.
So remember, we've talked about in the past that IRAs are subject to, you can only contribute up to the amount of your earned income that year. So if you're getting just passive income from, you know, dividends or some other or interest, that doesn't count. It has to be earned income for the year. I mean, of course, there are certain different rules that apply to spouses if you are like a stay-at-home mom or anything, but those same rules don't apply for children. So if you're going to open an IRA for your child, first of all, you would have to open it in your name as the guardian of that account. And then the child, the contribution would have to be up to the amount of the child's earned income.
What would be earned income for a child?
So something that came up in the group, their allowance for doing household chores does not count. That's not earned, even though in a sense they sort of earn it.
But the tax guy is not going to come knocking the door down.
No. So things like babysitting could count, but you have to keep meticulous records. If you, for example, though, hire your child to do like a piano lessons for your other child once every 2 weeks, and it's a regular interval and there's regular records, that might work. But again, the IRS frowns on these things. It's better if someone else hires your child. Of course, if they have W-2 income, then that's easy.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a home business and you can employ that child, again, there are certain child labor laws you'll also want to look into and make sure you're complying with those. But the child labor laws are different for family-run businesses as well. You know, make sure you have the proper permits and are following the hourly restrictions. But it has to be earned income.
How would they know how they got that income?
Well, there's a couple ways. So every year when you file your taxes, you're claiming your child as a dependent and you're taking a child dependent deduction. If the earned income for your child exceeds that deduction, which I think in 2019 was around $1,100. So if you're trying to have your child contribute to a Roth IRA or an IRA and their contributions are more than $1,100, the IRS is going to expect your child to file an income tax return.
Oh, okay. They want to know where that money came from.
Exactly.
I gotcha. Because they had to use the Social Security number to open the account.
Yes, and they have to use a Social Security number to claim the deduction. Even if they don't contribute that money to an IRA, if your child earns income that exceeds the deduction, they have to file a return.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And we've talked before
about...
That makes
it so complicated for kids. Yeah. You know, I used to have a lemonade stand. It was so easy.
Yeah. Now, of course, if your child is eligible for making the contributions, it should go into a Roth IRA rather than a traditional because, you know, that money's going to grow tax-free and they're not going to pay taxes on it to withdraw it. And presumably, they're in a very low or non-existent tax bracket right now. So it's practically no tax on it ever.
Can you imagine if a kid had a summer job mowing grass and stuff like that and they put money in a Roth IRA? That would be later?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you might see like promotions for Roth IRAs for kids, like Fidelity does it or whatever, but there's nothing special about it, at least as far as the IRS is concerned. The same amounts are needed to open it, the same rules apply. The main difference between them is that there's a custodian or guardian that's assigned to the account, someone who's over the age of 18.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these banks like Schwab and Fidelity, they want to get you in the ecosystem. I guess you could call it that. If they get you into Fidelity now, the chance of you wanting to move, it's kind of like a cell phone plan. Once you're in with your cell phone plan, you think it's hard to change. Yeah. They just want you in there and then they'll sell you other services as you grow up and... They just want you in the door. So,
yeah. About it. Like kids do all sorts of things, like paper routes would count.
Just say paper route?
Yeah. I mean, they're getting a W-2 for a paper route or even a 1099 something.
Is there such a thing as paper route still?
Some people still get newspapers.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in Florida. I forgot.
Yes.
Come on. That was funny.
Yeah. It is funny. Now, keep in mind, if your son or daughter is making more, like $10,000 or whatever, delivering papers, they still can only contribute the maximum, like $6,000.
Gotcha. Okay.
But again, the key here is qualified earned income.
Qualified earned income. Got it. Mm. My kids are too old now. I don't.
Yeah. I mean, you can't pay them $1,000 for one night of babysitting. I mean, that's not legit.
Yeah. Yeah. The IRS is starting to knock on people's doors. Anybody making over $100,000 now is what I heard.
They are. I saw that. They're actually making
house
calls.
I am petrified.
Well, no. So they're knocking on doors of people making more than $100,000 who failed to file a tax return.
Oh, okay. So I'm
not
good.
Not just everyone. Yeah, not right. Everyone. As long as you file your taxes, you're okay.
I do file. I do.
Unless you drawn for an audit randomly. Right. They don't do many random ones anymore, though. At least that's my understanding, just because they're shorthanded and not very well funded.
And I'm assuming when I read that, I think they're going after the people that don't file and not worrying currently about the people that are at least filing something.
That's right. Yep. Nope. Now they're only going and knocking on people's doors. And how do they know you have that income? Well, because other people are reporting it. You know, your employer has to send in their end of the W-2.
Yeah. The computers and AI are now kicking out the names. Trust me. Yeah. They're going to get you.
They know.
Yeah.
They know. And the banks are sending them records for whatever you're earning in interest and dividends. You know, they know.
Yeah.
You just aren't filing your return. So they're going to come knocking because, that's a good tax.
You got to pay. You got to pay people.
Pay to play.
All right. Baby steps. Really a final review. We're going to do this really quick. What's that?
I said, okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry. we're going to go do a final review of these baby steps, and we're going to close some loose ends here. And like Amanda said, this is going to show up a lot. Matter of fact, every time people send me a question, I can adapt these to that answer.
Yeah. You know, we should make a graphic with the steps and just post it up on the page as well.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to do one of those Instagram squares. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Exactly. Because then people can like keep it handy as their cheat sheet.
Absolutely. I love that. Here we go. Should I do the baby steps or you want to take a stab at it?
Oh, why don't we alternate?
Okay. Baby step one. I'll do the easy one. Okay. Baby step one, $1,000 in your emergency fund. But if you make less than $25,000 a year, we can go with $500.
Yes. And that's your mini emergency fund.
Yeah. You love that name. Yeah. Mini. I like that. Mini emergency fund.
Oh, because it reminds me of the cute little, mini car. Anyway. That's just cute.
Yes.
Step two, pay off your debt using the debt snowball. So here I want to correct something. A couple episodes ago, I was sleepy that night and I think I reversed it in the instructions. You want to gain momentum and pay off your smallest debt first, right, Craig?
Absolutely. It's your small wins.
I think last week I said the largest one first. That's just how my brain works, but
the Dave Ramsey way is to pay
off the smallest one first.
Yes. Right? And it's contrary to other things you see on the internet. It's the small wins that makes you feel good and build up to, taking on the big one. So, step number three, 3 to 6 months of expenses in savings for your fully funded emergency fund.
There you go. Let's see. Step four. Invest a minimum of 15% of your income into a retirement plan.
Yep. Step number five, fund college for children, 529s, if you choose to.
Yeah, I think this is an optional step.
Yeah. What kind of loan can you get and what can you not get?
Yeah, so this is one that I really, I disagree in the order of priority. This one at most should be step six. Anyway.
Yeah.
In Dave's plan, it's step five.
Yep.
We can agree to disagree.
But remember, you can do 4, 5, and 6 simultaneously.
Yeah, okay.
So, is it my turn? No, it's your turn.
Oh, no, it's mine. Sorry. I was still thinking about how that doesn't make any sense. Step six, pay off your home early. So, yes, you can do it at the same time, but you're not going to pay off your home as fast if you're still funding college.
Correct. And baby step seven, build wealth and give a bunch away generously.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. To do these baby steps, and Amanda, you have firsthand knowledge in this with your sister. So please.
Well, with myself too, but that was.
That's true. That was, but we actively have your sister doing this.
Yeah.
What are you known as to her? You're her.
Cheerleader. So my sister's doing it. My mother's doing it. My sister-in-law. So my husband's sister, they're currently doing it as well. So I know a lot of people going through it right now.
Shout out to all of them. Hopefully they're listening. But it's always good to have a cheerleader. It's like whether you're losing weight, exercising, dieting. You know, this is just the same kind of thing. Don't you agree?
Yeah, because it's someone to help you stay accountable.
Right.
All right. So let me share a story. So my sister, I mentioned before, my nephew was almost 8. So last week he actually turned 8. It was his birthday. And you know, kids' birthdays can be one of those things that implodes your monthly budget, right? Mm,
Chuck E. Cheese is expensive.
It is. So you know what they did? They went to one of the local event places in Wisconsin. It's like a Top Golf, but they have other, like, it's indoors because it's Wisconsin.
Well, yeah.
And it's February. Indoors, and they have like electronic screens where you can do some golfing or hockey and all that.
Oh, wow.
And you rent basically the room or the lane for like, on Tuesday nights, it's a special. It's like $20 Tuesdays. You get the whole room. Everyone in your party gets to be playing the games for a total of $20. And because their system was glitchy, they're like, oh, no, we'll cut the price in half. So for $10, she threw a party.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm like, that's awesome. So great.
I want to go.
Yeah. And then they had like 2 half price appetizers and fed the family with that instead. So I thought that was pretty good.
That's pretty awesome.
Party. Yeah.
Other than having your cheerleader, you should determine what is your why. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. So what's motivating you? Like, what does your life look like when you're done with this plan?
Right. What is the reason why you want to get out of debt? You want to have an emergency fund? You want to build up your retirement? Some things could be like spend more time with your family. Like this insane thing that's going on where everyone thinks both people have to earn an income. That is not necessary if you're debt-free, Amanda. You could live on one income because you're not spending it on credit cards and car debt and boat debt and all this crazy stuff.
And mortgages.
Mortgages. Travel the world. Like, yeah, you enjoy doing experiences.
Yep, that's my why.
I love going around the world. Just look at my Instagram. It's full of that stuff.
Yeah, that's not really fair, though, because you go mostly on someone else's dime.
It's true. Hey, pretty smart, huh? They said I should travel in retirement.
Yeah.
So I work for 2 travel industries at the same time.
You're pretty covered.
Hey, I joke to everyone, I'm going to work at Hertz Rent a Car next. That'll be the trifecta. That's the triple crown right there. Yeah, man.
You have the airline, the hotel, and then the rental car.
Yeah, done. Then I need to work for a restaurant. Start your own business. That's always fun to do. Mm-hmm. Something you're passionate about. It doesn't necessarily have to make a lot of money, but it just makes you happy running a business.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just plain tired of the constant arguments and the stress in your house.
Yeah, that's probably a big one. I would imagine that's a big one for people.
Yeah. Or you're just plain tired. You're just tired of everything.
Tired of the rat race and never getting ahead or getting off the wheel.
Yeah. And if you're going to do these baby steps, it doesn't happen overnight, people. It's not a magic formula that's going to make everything disappear in 3 months. Though, some people have done it in 3 months. But depending on your debt, it could take 1 to 7 years to get through it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And during that whole time, let's say you're going out 5 years trying to knock all this out. Your furnace could go out. You may have to replace your car. You may get bored. You're looking at Instagram and Karen is out there traveling the world and keeps posting on Instagram and everything. She's on some beach and you just get tired of looking at it. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to Southwest.com vacations. I'm heading to Aruba. That stuff happens. And then you get back and you're like, oh, crap. What did I just do? You got to keep reminding yourself, what was the why? What should we do? Like put it on the refrigerator, put it in your car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know people who put their motivation like right in their dashboard in their car, right? Yeah. Like right next to their speedometer so that every morning on their drive to work, they are reminded of, you know, why am I going to this job?
Yeah.
You know, and you also have it then on the drive home so that you're not stopping at the drive-thru on your way home and instead you're planning what you're going to cook from your ingredients that are already at home and save yourself some money that way. So that's one tip. People, you know, like when you're trying to lose weight, you put it on your, in your mirror or on the refrigerator, wherever your points of weakness are, that's where I would put it.
Yep. That's a good idea to do in your car, because you're on your way home from work. Last thing you want to do is cook dinner.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, I'll just go pick up something and take it home. That right there, when you keep doing that, adds up. And you could have been paying off some debt.
Yep.
What was that dollar amount? $27, something like that, per day?
Oh, yeah.
It's $10,000 a year. I go to buy Little Caesars, get pizza. I'm like, I'll just buy some pizza. Eh, it's only $5.
Right.
On top of everything else you bought already today, it adds up. If you have a setback, don't give up. And I'm not going to say it's okay, because it's not okay. But if you do, get up, brush off the dust, and get back to it. And remember what your why is.
It's progress, not perfection, right, Craig? Like,
everyone's human. Yeah, but I'm not going to give permission to say, hey, it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not okay.
But that also isn't an excuse to quit and say, oh, well, I failed, so throw in the towel.
I've heard a lot of other podcasts say, oh, it's okay, but no, it's not. You need to get with your cheerleader, say what happened, and make sure the cheerleader is helping you make sure it doesn't happen again. All right,
it's like an AA sponsor.
That's right. All right, just a quick couple reminders about cars and trucks. The total value of your vehicles should not exceed more than 50% of annual income. If it does, you have too much vehicle. And no, Amanda, we've talked about this before. It's not permission to go up to 50% of your annual income. Always purchase previously owned vehicles, high quality, low price vehicles. Check Consumer Reports. They've always done this reliability survey of used vehicles. Never lease, pay cash if at all possible. If your vehicle debt takes longer than 2 years to pay off, in your baby step number two, consider selling it. Probably means you have too much car. If you owe $35,000, you probably have too much car.
Yeah. You know, I saw a funny Judge Judy episode last week. Yeah, this girl went into a used car place, and instead of just getting the hoopty, like we say, she went in with her like $3,500 and put a down payment, you know, like a $12,000 or $13,000 car. But her credit was so bad, it was a 29% interest rate.
Oh my God! Are you serious?
How is
that possible?
It's outrageous.
Where'd she get that?
You
know,
Judge Judy's like, you should have just bought a $3,500 car. Wouldn't have been sexy, but it would have got you from A to B.
I can't imagine what her face, Judge Judy's face, looked like.
Oh, I'm sure you can't imagine. You know how she looks at people. I've watched it enough.
She's awesome.
Yeah, hey, she doesn't suffer fools, that's for sure.
No. Have you ever seen her house, by the way?
No.
She makes a boatload of money doing that show.
She is the highest paid person on television.
You would not think some afternoon judge would make that much money, but she rakes it in. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But she earns every bit of it. I will sit and watch it.
I know. She's great.
Home ownership, just real quick, and you could throw in a few because you're a realtor, but 15-year fixed loan is what we're looking for, where the payment is no more than 25% of your take-home pay. And that's the entire payment, PMI, your HOA, all whatever is bundled in that payment in your escrow account, no more than 25% of your take-home pay.
Good. And so the same would apply to your rent payment.
Oh, good point. Whoa, check you out.
Yeah, because a lot of people aren't quite there in their lives where they're ready for home ownership. So we would apply the same rules for rentals.
You know, and that I would love to sell my house right now and just simply rent, but it would actually cost me more to rent.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Well, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. That doesn't help either. But anyway, so there you go. Baby steps reviewed. And we're going to revisit these on a constant basis on various topics just to fine tune it. Okay.
All right, well, let's take a break, and then we can come back and talk about what is this, Core and Explore.
Ooh, Core and Explore. I get core to talk a lot. You're getting like a big break today. What the heck?
That just means I have to pay attention.
Yeah, but you're the brains of this operation. All right, we'll be right back. Right after this, you're listening to Craig and Amanda on Rock on the Money. To Rock on the Money. Don't forget, we are giving away prizes, Amanda. Ooh. All you got to do is instead
cha-ching,
of...
Cha-ching.
You've been a little feisty in the last few episodes coming back from the break. Hey, all you guys simply do is instead of sending me an email or an IM at 2 o'clock in the morning, just simply call 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625, and record your question. And then you're entered into a contest to win a prize. We're giving away gift cards, Amanda, to Amazon and Walmart. Your choice.
Your choice. And a quick tip, $50 at Walmart could buy your groceries for the week.
Whoa. Absolutely. That's actually correct. And have it waiting for you. They'll bring it out to your car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For no additional charge.
And here's another tip, Amanda. You right now, if you call right now, you have a 1 in 5 shot at winning. We only have
that's
four entries. It makes us sound like we have no listeners. We do have listeners. It's everyone's shy. Nobody wants to call.
And if you're listening, please be sure that you are also subscribing to the podcast.
Yes. A lot of you are not subscribing to the podcast, but of course, we're talking to the people that are listening to the podcast. So that's really not helping any. So.
Well, but we have a lot of listeners. They just don't subscribe. So, you know, they don't know when our great latest and greatest comes out.
Yeah. Ooh, the latest and greatest. And you know what, Amanda? We work extremely hard at this. The only thing we ask in return is for your subscriptions and your reviews and ratings. We're needy in that aspect.
And phone calls.
And phone calls.
and
gifts and
longer.
Christmas. Yes.
Yeah.
If it meets the budget, which Amanda will talk about here in a minute. Core and Explore, Amanda.
Core and Explore.
I just realized that as the stock market was going crazy and people asking me what to do with their funds and money and what should I switch to? You know, people normally don't think about their 401ks until the stock market's in trouble. It's in the news all day long. All of a sudden, oh my God, I need to look and what am I doing? And then they realize they've been doing everything a little wrong, or maybe they're in funds they shouldn't be. So they start asking us questions. So it's been very busy in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And I realized that we have never talked about Core and Explore, have we?
Yeah, what's that? No.
Okay, so this is a very basic tactical strategy that anybody can do. And it's really geared towards newer investors, which a majority of the people listening to this podcast are. Okay. Now, if you went and Googled this term, this phrase, Core and Explore, you're going to see all kinds of crazy things where even I was getting confused by what they were saying, Amanda. So how about I just simplify this greatly? And then if I mansplain it, you can greatly simplify it from that point.
So you want me to mansplain it further?
I need the women to de-mansplain whatever I say.
Oh, okay. So I need to actually bring it back up to an intelligent level.
Even got simplify. Yeah, there we go. So this will work with a 401k, your 403b, your 457, your IRA, and your brokerage accounts, all these crazy things we got going on out there, okay? So when we begin investing, we need a core product. We need something that we can stick with over the long term. Remember, Amanda, three words,
long-term mindset. Don't be a hypocrite.
No, that was looking at your funds. For us, what we've been telling everybody, recommending, is to start out, you do 100% in a low-cost S&P 500 index fund. There's a bunch of them out there. We're never going to change it. This is something we're going to keep 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Okay, Amanda?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, we have a number of fans and listeners that use the Empower is another 401k platform for one company where there's live listeners from. And
so,
I've been
sorry. So is that different than like Fidelity?
Yes. No, it's the same thing as Fidelity. It's just one of these companies that approaches a corporation and says, we'll manage your 401k for you.
Oh, okay. So it's like similar to Fidelity.
Right. Empower is a very popular one that a lot of companies out there use. Like T. Rowe Price is with my 457. I have Empower over here at this 401k. I got another 401k run by another company. It's just a company that manages your 401k at a place of business. Okay.
Got it.
So we have a lot of people from this one company. I've been telling them to do a 50-50% split between the Vanguard 500 index fund and a fund called Harbor Capital. And the reason I've told them that, Harbor Capital has consistently beat the S&P 500 index. So by having both of those as your core, you have a very good chance of doing very well long-term.
Right.
Of getting 10 to 12%.
Instead of the 5%.
Absolutely. So I'm having them do that as the core. Now, this is completely different than what I've been put into in the past, in the 80s mm-hmm. and 90s, where T. Rowe Price would put me in 6 to 12 different funds. That's not a core.
No, that means that they like to make money off of you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how you end up with 5 to 8% right there. That I call that mutual fund soup or stew or whatever you want to call that. It's too much. It's crazy. Anyway, we want to get that down to 1 to 4 funds at the most, whatever you have. Okay, so basically S&P 500 index fund, and if you have another one that outperforms that, make that part of your core. Okay, now as you continue to listen to the podcast, you listen to other people, other podcasts that you trust, you're reading, you're starting to learn, you're reading books. There's a lot of great books. We should actually post a list of good books to read that are unbiased out there. Mm.
I was thinking we could do like a book review segment sometime. Yeah.
I mean, Jack Bogle from Vanguard, he started Vanguard. That's a very great book to learn, to read. And Peter Lynch. Anyway.
Now is not the time for the list.
That would be the mansplaining. As you continue to learn about mutual funds, stocks, and ETFs, now it's time to explore. So we want to spend up to 20% of your total account. And then we're going to look at other things that are a little bit riskier, but we put effort and study into those and we feel confident that those will outperform the index, Amanda.
But you don't have to go to the Explore.
No.
You could just stay in core forever and ever and do just fine.
And you know what? A majority of people listening right now shouldn't even do the Explore part, really, because it takes... You have to devote time and it's homework. If you don't want to do that, just do the index fund. You will be fine. You will get 8 to 10% long term historically. It's been proven. There's no argument with that. Okay. But if you choose to do this and you want to read more and learn, you could buy stocks, ETFs, electronic traded funds. ETFs is basically like a mutual fund, but you can trade them instantly. You don't have to wait a whole trading cycle like a mutual fund. So I like XLK, which is actually a portion of the entire S&P 500, but it's just the technology stocks, which it can be more volatile, but it's all technology. And I'm a big believer in technology, just like you are, Amanda.
Yes.
And that one historically has outperformed the rest of the S&P 500, but it's more volatile. So
it is. Yeah. So it goes up quite a bit, but then it'll also have wild drops. Like we saw a couple weeks ago, craziness going on with the Tesla stock, right?
Yes. Yeah. So in Microsoft has already come out and said because of the coronavirus, they're not going to meet their quarterly expectations. So the stock plummeted. So, you know, and that's the heaviest weight of the S&P 500 and XLK. So you don't have as much diversity in that, but you can also be rewarded if you believe in technology. That's just one example. I'm not telling everybody.
I mean, technology is not going away. So no. I think it's a pretty safe bet.
And that's, I'm a big technology investor. I believe in Apple, Microsoft, Amazon. Anyway. But I'm not telling you to buy it, everybody. Please, that was not an endorsement of XLK. But you can buy stocks, Amanda, if you do research. If you have Apple products throughout your house, you love Apple, you believe in Apple. Apple's a very well-run company. You can buy Apple stock. You can buy Microsoft. Shopify You love Shopify.
I love Shopify.
Yes. And not just for shopping.
I don't actually use Shopify, but I love their stock.
Yes. And by the way, people, we're not endorsing these stocks.
We picked it up years ago, yeah. And we tried to tell everyone, hey, if you want to invest in one stock, this is it. And no one believed us. Yep. Well, yeah.
Tesla is another one, just like Shopify. You know, you are either a believer in Elon Musk or not. It went from 250 up to the 900s. Another great one that the millennials have jumped on, Virgin Galactic. SPCE, because they believe in space travel, because Virgin Airlines and the Virgin Corporation, they want to have spaceports around the world. Virgin, and the Branson first is place is down there too. In New Mexico. So it's already built. It's ready to go. So people are betting on that. Don't take advice from Karen over there on Facebook or Uncle Larry or the people at work saying, hey, you should go buy this stock. That's not how you get stock
people
tips.
Probably are regretting not taking my and my husband's advice 5 years ago.
Exactly.
We told everyone we knew, get on this bandwagon.
But you had reasons, stuff like, but you know, a lot of people, they see it on online somewhere. Yeah. You need to do your own research. Take all the opinions and you got to learn how to research these things. There's books that will lead you through that process. You can practice trading stocks and investing and see how you're doing, if you're picking the right thing. It's kind of hard to do because we're not doing long term, but you could do like a 1 month thing and just make a spreadsheet. You can make a Google spreadsheet and you can actually insert the live ticker reports into there and you can show it live. There's a lot of places you can go to Yahoo Finance and create your own practice trading platform there. There's a bunch of places online to do that.
You know, when I was in middle school, I had a project where I had to pick some stocks and follow them. And that's when I actually learned how to track
I wish they would bring that back.
Stock market.
You know?
What?
I wish they would bring back personal finance and how to do all that.
It hasn't gone anywhere in the Wisconsin schools. It's still there.
Oh.
But that was back when we had, newspaper daily delivery.
And you had to look it up
open
on
the money section every day and look at my little stocks that I picked and check them out. We had to send in our trades by mail.
You mean like physical mail?
Yeah.
Holy crap. I don't even own a stamp.
I had to ride my bicycle to the post office 2 miles away to mail in my trade.
God. And just to recap, everybody, you do not have to do the explore part. You should start with a core, at least have your S&P 500 index fund as your starting point. If you decide to go beyond that, that's your explore. Do no more than 20%. Okay, that's it.
All right.
Well, I need a break, Amanda. Savings. What could we possibly do so I can take a break?
How about some savvy savings?
Yes!
All right. Well, today it's a short one. We're going to talk about budgeting for annual expenses.
Ooh.
So over the last couple of episodes, with the exception of our special episode with Sam on wills and trusts, we've been talking about budgeting.
She was amazing, by the way.
Yeah, she really is amazing.
I can't get that episode out of my mind. It was so awesome. We need to do more guests.
Yeah, I'm
with
open
her.
To more guests.
Okay, anyway.
So we talked a lot in the past about budgeting and looking at your monthly expenses and looking at what you spent over the course of the last 12 months. I did want to emphasize that those monthly expenses should also incorporate your annual expenses. And I know we talked about it before, but I just wanted to spend a little bit more time expanding on annual expenses.
Awesome.
So those are the expenses that you don't pay each and every month, but you pay like annually, once a year. So they can sneak up on you and wreck your budget if you don't plan for them. So the best way around that is to make a list. So look at last year's spending. Sometimes you can Google as well, like examples of annual expenses. And I've come up with a few examples. And Craig, feel free to jump in with some more.
Oh, yeah.
But like taxes, some people don't put their money in escrow, or if your mortgage is paid off, you don't have an escrow account anymore. Property taxes would come up annually.
Mm-hmm.
Car registrations, household repairs, or remember back in one of our earlier savvy savings segments, we talked about getting your HVAC service twice a year.
Oh yeah.
So that's a biannual expense. You'd want to make sure that that's accounted for. Pest control, home and auto insurance, obviously the big ones are Christmas and birthdays.
Oh, yeah.
Back to school expenses. Those creep up on people. Subscriptions. Oh, my goodness. Oh. So I saw a report today or somewhere in an article today that the average amount people spend each month on subscription services, $257.
Are you serious?
Yes. So like you add up, you know, like Netflix and your Audible subscription, which is like $15 a month to listen to books where you could listen to them for free from the library. Uh-huh. You know, all those subscriptions, Hulu, you know, Amazon Prime. So Amazon Prime is another one. That one actually sneaks up on you once a year. And it's like $120 now, but it equates to $10 a month, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's another thing is, you know, side tangent here. Take a look at what you're spending on subscription services each month. I was shocked. $257 is outrageous. It's because $10 here and there adds up very quickly.
And they're pretty slick about pricing all these things.
Yeah.
Oh, it's only $5. It's only
and
10.
And it's so easy with the auto pay.
Yeah. And you don't see it. And it's a big budget buster. We've talked about this numerous times.
Yeah. So some other examples, new tires or brakes, factor that in. So obviously like larger car repairs, you want to just set aside some money each year for a regular car maintenance and repairs. Something has to happen each year to keep your car running well. Otherwise, right. You're going to need a new car. Mm-hmm. Copays. So depending on what your insurance plan is, you'll want to budget in your medical copays each year. Professional licensing fees. So this one hits me hard. I have, you know, a number of certifications and licenses that have annual fees associated with them.
What a scam.
Yeah, I know.
But and then you need them.
And then they make you pay for the continuing education classes too. Mm. Membership dues. So if you're a part of any type of club or organization and they have dues that come once a year. Mm-hmm. Tax prep fees. And obviously we talked last episode about your annual analysis of your will with your attorney.
Oh, yeah.
And then things like summer camp or extracurriculars for your kids. Hmm. Anything to add there, Craig?
No, that was a great list. Oh, I can't think of anything else. That was pretty good.
So what you want to do is just kind of organize your list and then total up the categories. And you can organize them however you like, whatever works best for the way that your mind and your budget works best for you. So like I might put tires and brakes in the same category as auto insurance.
Oh, okay.
Or I might just add, because I like things super simple, I might just add everything up and say, these are my annual expenses and I need to set aside, you know, $750 a month extra for anything that comes up in any of these categories.
Oh, okay.
And just have a list and just cross it off each month when that one expense comes up. That's one way of doing it. But the idea then is to organize the list, total everything up, and then divide by the number. Well, there's two ways. You can divide by the number of months in the year, and that's your monthly expense. But I'm not sure that that's a really accurate way to get started because some of these expenses are going to come up like maybe next month, and you wouldn't have had 12 months to save up for it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I say organize a list and then divide by the number of paychecks until that expense is due. So if I know I have, like, back to school is in August, and that's what, we're now in March, April, May, June, July, August, 5 months. So let's just round ballpark 10 paychecks until then. What would I need to set aside each paycheck to make sure I have enough money before back to school shopping comes along?
So wait a minute, are we adding this up for the whole year and we just put in that envelope and then it comes out of just one envelope, or do we do 12?
So the those are two options. Some people do better with the first option of putting everything in one envelope. I say until you have your budget completely under control, you should go one level down and make an envelope, or at least an envelope for each expense, or at a minimum an envelope for each category of expenses.
And do I do that for each month? Like I know February is Valentine's Day, and then
yes,
okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So the summer envelopes will have all the camp and the, you know, the day camps and all that stuff in it, swim memberships. And
well, you would have all of those envelopes every month because you're contributing to them every month until the expense comes up.
There we go. Now I got you. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to have an envelope every month to make your contribution to it. And then when the expense comes up, you can take from the envelope.
Perfect.
Yep. So put money in the envelope each month, or actually each pay period, not just each month. The alternative I mentioned is you can add up all the expenses into one large total and then divide by the number of paychecks you get each year and put away that amount into one annual expense envelope. And then just like write on the front of the envelope all of your annual expenses and then just cross them off as they come up. For those expenses that are truly unexpected emergencies, you know, not something that is completely predictable, like your car registration, but for real unexpected emergencies, that's what your emergency fund would be for.
You mean like true emergencies?
Yeah, like back to school shopping is not an emergency.
Oh, you mean Black Friday is not a true emergency?
No, Black Friday is not an emergency. Summer camp's not an emergency.
Concert tickets?
No, an emergency. Okay. So I know that was a little bit confusing, but there's a couple of different ways, I guess, is the summary there for budgeting for annual expenses. And what's important is making sure that you pick the route that works best for you that you can stick with. So I know me personally, I would drive myself bonkers with 25 different envelopes to add to every month. Hmm. Some people like to see that so that they can say, oh, yes, I've made my progress towards this expense. And then you can lick that envelope and it's sealed up and you know it's ready to go. I work better with, you know, a list and then just making sure I have enough money to cover what's on the list.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing from this is the awareness that these things exist. You need to be prepared for them. Otherwise, your budgeting is just going to be out of whack.
Yeah. And one way or another, you have to budget each month for annual expenses.
Right. I think a lot of people just forget they have to do a monthly budget. Every month gets a new budget.
Yeah.
So that was awesome, Amanda. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And as always, a quick reminder, check out our website, rockonthemoney.com. We have show notes. All the podcasts are located right there. The website turns into a player. You can play it right on your phone. Plus, there's links there so you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn. And if you could leave us a review and some star ratings on those platforms, it really, really helps us out a lot. Check out our Facebook group community with over 3,000 people in there. Facebook.com/groups/your401k. And also check out our Facebook page at Rock on the Money. So long, everybody. We really, really do have a lot of gratitude for you listening, sharing, and spreading the word. You guys are great. Amanda and I cannot emphasize how much we appreciate you guys. So long, and we'll see you again next week. Until next time, America. America's Rockland, USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.